there is solid evidence in the research studies that were published, in the patents that were awarded, and the grants that were given in the last 20 years that shows that the COVID-19 was engineered with a gain-of-function virus. But in addition to that, this was documented by Dr. Richard Fleming, who's an attorney, a nuclear cardiologist, and a physician and a researcher. He actually sat in on an editorial board for Lancet prior to their publishing the fraudulent hydroxychloroquine study, which he resigned from. It was a man has integrity. But in addition, he's as a lawyer, he's very familiar with the law and has compiled some forms that anyone can use if they're under compulsory vaccinations. So that is definitely a benefit from listening to the information, the exciting and educated and insightful details that go on in this.
You see real efforts to produce viruses, in particular spike proteins of coronaviruses, to be even more specific, as I show in the book, paid for by the federal government, by people who say that, no, they were not involved in gain-of-function research. Well, you know, their fingerprints are on the documents, or on the published papers, or on the grants, or on the patents. You can't say that we're not involved in things when the documents show differently. And there's things, obviously, that are not in the book that are going to come out for the International Criminal Court, because this virus is, by definition, a biological weapon. It violates the Biological Weapons Convention Treaty. You just have to look at the definitions. It provides nothing useful to humanity. It's dangerous. If you're injecting someone with these drug vaccine biologics, you are injecting them with something that you cannot possibly give them informed consent for, which means you're violating your Hippocratic Oath. You're violating the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights Treaty. You're violating the Nuremberg Code. Violating the Declaration of Helsinki, it's right across the board. It's not even something that you can pretend doesn't happen anymore. It's just in everybody's faces. See that the powers that be are so stressed out right now that they are cajoling and coercing and manipulating and attacking. You know, there are people, powers that be, that kind of think that they have things good. It's very clear to me that they're not as confident that they've got everybody under control, because the way in which this is all being handled demonstrates that they're more worried about than not, and I think they're worried about the consequences, and as well they should be.
Welcome, everyone. Dr. Mercola, your health in these crazy times, and we've got an incredible author and physician and scientist and researcher, Dr. Richard Fleming, today, who's going to new book, COVID-19, a bioweapon that is an incredibly well-documented with respect to the assertions and the history that many of us aren't aware of. I mean, I knew that this was a bioweapon, well, that it was an engineered virus, which is the first step in gain-of-function virus, this year, but the as Dr. Fleming will go into deeply, and this thing goes back not a year or two, it goes back two decades, which is crazy that they've been and they finally brought it to fruition. So a lot of good information, and welcome and thank you for joining us.
It's my pleasure to be here. Thank you for the invitation.
So I would think, rather than me trying to summarize your prolific career, why don't you give us a summary of your expertise, because you're a physician, a researcher, a lawyer, an attorney. So you know, you've got a lot of skill sets. Just two, I believe.
Right. I'm originally a physicist. This is now, I think, year 53 for research for me. And began very early in life.
What about three or four years old or what?
Well, actually, seventh grade was when the JFK administration's program kicked in and kind of did some of us out of our normal life, what we were doing.
Wow. What did you do in seventh grade?
Well, I apparently offended somebody enough to be part of the program. Which we're being tested on long before the seventh grade turns out to be physics, and calculus was just the mathematic language for that. But physics and particularly high energy particle physics, and something that I find very fascinating, very interesting. I eventually kind of wound up doing some of that later on in life as a nuclear cardiologist. So it's kind of hard to get away from a field that you find very fascinating and makes sense to you over the course of time. So 50th in physics and in medicine, and as many people know, I actually developed the inflammation and heart disease theory and presented at American Heart in 1994. I joined American Heart in 1976 as the youngest faculty member at that time, and I got put in several standing committees as a result, basic and advanced cardiac life support, as well as the physician cluster education faculty, and the research on dietary influences and factors that are critical, not only for, in the end, heart disease, but other chronic inflammatory diseases, be that cerebrovascular or diabetes or cancer, for a wide variety of problems that I know you and probably many of your listeners are aware of with the prior work that you've talked about.
Well, I want to learn more about that, but I want to add another credential to your list that you may not mention, but I think I'm really proud of you because it shows you that as a researcher, you were on the editorial review board for Lancet, and you quit in protest of the horrendous article they published to disparage hydroxychloroquine and the fraudulent data that was submitted by Surgisphere. So thank you for doing that.
Yeah, that's, people either thought I was nuts or had some credibility. Yeah, really, you know, I research a review for something like 16, 17, 18 journals, and I'm editor on a couple. And it just really, this is a violation of science. Scientific medical journals are not political journals. They're not, I mean, we do have opinion pieces, but those opinions are supposed to be in areas of science. They're not supposed to be in areas of, you know, I as a cardiologist, I point out to people that, you know, this problem with hydroxychloroquine, and again, I don't classify any of these drugs. The research that I did for finding treatments for SARS-CoV-2 and COVID had to do with the mechanisms of action or how the drugs work, not what category you want to lump them into. I mean, every drug works in more than one way and can be used for more than one purpose. And I think that that's something that the FDA has forgotten for the physicians being able to use in off-label uses. But, you know, if hydroxychloroquine was actually problematic for heart rhythms, you'd have seen Anthony Fauci and a lot of other people coming up and saying, oh, we got a case of polymorphic ventricular tachydysrhythmia or torsade de pois. What you haven't seen is because nobody's reported an actual rhythm problem with hydroxychloroquine. So I think that's kind of, you know, what's the expression, egg on the face for him. But couldn't continue. I resigned from Lancet. I resigned from British Medical Journal Open Quality because of the same concerns that I saw going on. And you know, eventually we either stand behind Prince, we acquiesce and become nothing more than what the German doctors of Nazi Germany did during World War II. And, you know, as history showed us, they eventually paid a price at the Nuremberg trials. There were both the doctors' trials and the jurists' trials, or the attorneys and judges' trials. So these are things that, you know, there are people, powers that be, that kind of think that they have direction, but it's very clear to me that they're not as confident that they've got everybody under control, because the way in which this is all being handled demonstrates worried about the truth coming out than not. And I think they're worried about the consequences, and as well they should be.
Yeah, it's an effective strategy. There's no question, because the part of their process is to get into a mass psychosis that people are on, and they're doing with this propaganda. And part of the propaganda strategy is this massive censoring, which thankfully you chose to not participate in. So that was, but this is a good segue because you mentioned the Nuremberg trials and how ultimately the medical professionals that were working with Hitler were prosecuted. So what were your motivations to write this book? And maybe we can dive in. It's just a fascinating illustration. You did a great job of doing the documentation. I mean, some of it, I mean, it's really well documented. You've got all the patent numbers, all the details, and you reviewed the studies that go back for two decades. So why don't you tell us the story of what put it together and your connection to the what you believe might happen to the equivalent 21st century of Nuremberg.
So 2019 did the same thing to me as it did the rest of you. It kind of changed my life and what I thought I was going to be doing. I'd spent a couple of decades correcting errors, imaging, and developed something that I called FMTVDM. It's now come, many people know it as Fleming method. It's a way of accurately measuring what's going on inside the body. You think you have a problem? No, you don't. It actually measures what's going on inside the body.
And what is that tool or assay primarily target? What type of clinical conditions?
Well, actually, everything, the entire health spectrum. And that's one of the things that I've encouraged people to think of this as a health spectrum. So it began with my investigation into heart disease, and then it evolved into cancers and conditions like SARS-CoV-2. So by differentiating, using Fleming method, what we measure is, first off, we calibrate the cameras so they can accurately work because they're not accurately calibrated right now, or measurement. And then it can distinguish dead from normal living, from inflammation and infection to precancers to cancers. And then coronary artery disease is really not what people think it is.
What type of cameras are these? Infrared cameras or?
No, so these are nuclear imaging cameras, so they could be planar spec, they could be PET. So I'm actually certified in PET imaging and the only American. There's a lot of people who do it, but they're not actually certified in the way that they should be. And then Jan Schneider's in Switzerland, and I'm here in the U.S., Dallas, in particular. So it measures regional blood flow and metabolic differences, and that allows us to determine who. And then heart disease is the inability of the artery to relax to increase blood flow, and that requires an equation that I developed a number of years ago, a proprietary equation. This test allows us to actually do a body image scan measurement of what's going on. And there are areas that you can define as inflammatory or infectious processes. Me to do was to say, well, we can, you know, what are the treatments for this? Let's set up a study. So part of what I did at the beginning of 2020 was to do an exhaustive review as a Fleming. I was hoping I didn't have to go into infectious disease like Sir Alexander Fleming did, but I kind of got drug into it. And I really just did a literature review, which included about 300 to 400 papers of all sorts of different viral strategies, different viruses, whether that be Zika virus or HIV or any of a number of things. And to really look at how they reproduce themselves, what drugs might do what. And then I laid out a series of strategies, both for people as outpatients who might have been infected with SARS-CoV-2, the virus, people who get hospitalized with this inflammothrombotic response disease that I talked about first in 1994, the inflammation of heart disease. But it's an inflammothrombotic response where bacteria and viruses cause this. It's one of the reasons. So I had the tool for measuring it, and it was simply a matter of putting together a strategy. And so I set up a study in seven other different sites with 1,800 people, and we actually measured what worked and what didn't work over the time that the patients were in the hospital. And
you measured clinical interventions?
Well, we above and beyond clinical surgical interventions, we measured something much more important, which is what's happening at the tissue level, which is what Fleming method allows us to do. So you can every 3 days measure whether a level and how the infection and inflammation is responding. And what that allowed us to do was every 3 days, you know, for the people who came in the hospital with COVID, they would have Fleming method and a variety of other tests, and they would randomly be assigned to one of 10 treatment strategies. And then 3 days later, that would be repeated. And if they got substantially better by definition, then they were kept on that. Substantially worse, the treatment was stopped and another treatment randomly assigned. And if, in fact, they didn't get better or worse, they kind of held their own, then another treatment was randomly added to that. And so those 52 different treatment combinations. And so the study got divided into two parts, a phase one and a phase two. Phase one was really sorting out what drugs work and what combinations, and then taking those combinations that have proven themselves and actually then applied them right up front. So over the course of that study, we saw hospitalizations go from 5 to 6 weeks down to 1 to 2 weeks with turnaround. And we were very specific on how the ventilators are supposed to be used because they're being used incorrectly. And we've known that they're incorrect seems to be reading papers. So on the website, FlemingMethod.com, one of the categories are published papers, and there's over 160 papers now on that site for people to look at the EUA documents, how different drugs may treat these viruses. What do the vaccines do? Do the genetic sequences of the drug vaccines actually get into human thing? So instead of asking opinions, because there's enough people giving enough opinions, you know, my area is science. I'm a research scientist physician, and I'm adamant that you kind of have to come up with a scientific proof of what you're talking about. And, you know, sometimes that means I'm not going to be first, but I'm going to be right, or at least as right as humans can be with our science. Was kind of the goal. And then in the process of doing that research, I simply dug more and more and more and investigated what was going on. And that led me into the background of the research people have been doing, the millions of dollars, tens of millions of dollars that have been funneled out of the U.S. And Anthony Fauci has helped with that. I mean, he's been on those and in the book. You can see the grant numbers in the book. You can see the gain of function, which is the research that tries to look at viruses or other infections, but in this case, viruses, make the virus just a little more infective. Maybe we could stay ahead of it. And that theoretically sounds really good. And I think as a research scientist is good. Unfortunately, the question becomes, what happens when people go beyond the really good things? And what happens when people start doing things that maybe have some nefarious motives? And that's kind of what the real efforts to produce viruses, coronaviruses, in particular spike proteins of coronaviruses, to be even more specific, as I show in the book, paid for by the by people who say that, no, they were not involved in gain-of-function research. Well, you know, their fingerprints are on the documents, or on the published papers, or on the grants, or on the patents. You can't say that we're not involved in things when the documents show differently. And it shows the work that, you know, came out of the federal government that went to Peter Daszak at EcoHealth at the University of North Carolina, Shi Zeng Li at the Wuhan Institute of Virology, and other places. I mean, these aren't the only places involved, but there's certainly big names that are involved in the process. And, you know, for me, obviously, once I start to investigate something, about the only way you can stop me from doing that is to put a bullet in my head. And otherwise, I'm going to stay after it. One thing led to another, and we have been actively following you know, this investigation. There's things obviously that are not in the book that are going to come out at in international court that I'm saving for that, for the International Criminal Court, because this virus is by definition a biological weapon. It violates convention treaty. You just have to look at the definitions. It provides nothing useful to humanity. It's dangerous. You know, when Fort Detrick is involved and the Department of Defense is involved, and these guys aren't working with the Boy Scouts and all. And you see these monies and you see the people that are involved, you realize that, you know, as I put it to people, the United States was playing China, China was playing the United States, and you saw in between, and they're still playing the game. You know, it's, for lack of a better term, this book is an indictment. And that's now my attorney hat going on, saying, provided in this book, type of evidence that I would take to a grand jury and say, ladies and gentlemen, a blind person, if needed, we can see what's going on. And only if you choose not to do this, can it be ignored. But, you know, I'm not somebody who is going to give up on having these people dealt with, because, you know, all the freedoms that we have and the rights that we have as individuals, not to mention just the numbers of people who have died. My argument is, if they got the virus and they died with these diseases, they did die from the virus. The reason why they died is because they didn't get treatment of blood clotting that I've shown works, and other people, other doctors have shown that they have data that they believe works, right? And you know, the ultimate argument is that you can't kill somebody more than dead. So if they don't have the measured data, which I think that they should have, and I would help them if they wanted, what we do know is that they can't do worse than kill the patient. And we've already seen what doing nothing does. It kills the patient. And no other time in American history have doctors looked at patients and said, you know, we can't do anything for you. Go home and come back when you get sicker. And we have always treated people with breathing problems with medications for breathing. We've always treated people with clotting problems with medicines to stop the clotting. And so the reason why this is so critical to understand is because the same that were involved in the funding of this bioweapon are the same people that have interfered with doctors providing treatment to patients, are the same people that have been involved in the development of these vaccines. And once you appreciate, and it's up to you, the reader, is COVID-19 a bioweapon, a scientific and forensic investigation? It's up to the reader to decide, is it a bioweapon? But if you come to that conclusion, and I think you will, then you have to recognize that the vaccines that are nothing more than the genetic reproduction of that bioweapon is a bioweapon. And now what you see is the same people who made the weapon blocking treatment and disseminating more of the weapon, producing harm. And right now, the Delta variant is a classic example of pressurization, of selective pressurization of this virus to because, you know, natural immunity gets you immunity to the spike protein, to the nuclear capsid, to the rest of the components of the virus. And if you only target this and that spike protein changes, then the idea of a drug vaccine biologic is just laughable, because it's going to be too different from what you expose the body to, and it's not going to recognize it. So we have taken this mass forced vaccination of a, we have not provided informed consent. Because if you look at the package inserts, they're blank, intentionally blank. I've shown that at Event 2021, and other people have shown it. So there is consent for physicians to provide. So if you're injecting someone with these drug vaccine biologics, you are injecting them with something that you cannot possibly give them informed consent for, which means you're violating your Hippocratic Oath. You're violating the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights Treaty. You're violating the Nuremberg Code. You are violating the Declaration of Helsinki. It's right across the board. It's not even something that you can pretend doesn't happen anymore. It's just in everybody's faces. And you can see that the powers that be are so stressed out right now that and coercing and manipulating and attacking And in Italy, my friends in Italy tell me that the behavior of the Italians from people feeling stressed, the vaccinated are behaving in the same way that they did during World War II towards the Jews and the intellectuals. And let's remember, the first people that hit patient camps weren't the Jews. The first people were the intellectuals. Because if you take the intellectuals and the doctors off the street, if you stop people from talking, you can control the. So the pressure being put on the medical community in this country, in Italy, in other countries around the world, to simply go along is nothing more than the equivalent of what Adolf Hitler did and the SS did during World War II when they rounded up the intellectuals. And it's just one will lead to the next. And there's nothing about this that's campaign to control an infectious virus and a man-made one at that.
Yeah. Well, that's a lot of information. So I would suggest that it's a bit different than what Hitler did because that was a while ago. We're talking 70, 80 years ago. So we've gotten much more sophisticated technologically, and the propaganda campaign is exponentially more effective. So it's much easier to control the population through propaganda than it is through carting them off in trains and putting them to the concentration camps. So I'm wondering what your thoughts are on the equivalent of this vaccine. I mean, many people are calling it the kill shot with respect to the equivalent of essentially getting people, putting them on the trains and sending them to the camps. Mm-hmm.
Well, the answer to that question is all you have to do is read the emergency use authorization documents. I'm stunned at how many people have not read this. I'm stunned at physicians not having read this. I mean, I thought we always read the package insert or at least read the emergency use authorization documents. You can go to FlemingMethod.com. I've got several presentations on there, PDFs you can download where I've done this. And you read the emergency use authorization documents, data out of those documents, and you ask very fundamental scientific questions. Is there any statistical difference in the people, in the number of people who develop COVID or who die, in the people who are vaccinated versus those who are not vaccinated? And you come to a very definite conclusion. There is no sense in the two groups. The vaccines do not statistically reduce. There are fewer cases, but not statistically. And nobody in their right mind, I think, who's a physician, would walk up to somebody and say, Mrs. Jones, Mr. Jones, I have this drug that I want to give you to prevent you from getting heart disease. Now, it won't do anything more than a sugar pill, but I want you to take it. Physicians wouldn't prescribe that. And patients, I think, if they fully listen to the statement, wouldn't take it. They would go, well, why would I take something that's going to have no better outcome for me than doing nothing, right? So you look at that, and then you look at the fact that there are side effects, right? There are side effects, blood clotting, like I've talked about, and we're seeing it because when you look at these vaccines, and you look at Pfizer and Moderna, and you look at how many mRNA are in there, it's about 13.1 billion. And you look at the double-stranded DNA with AstraZeneca and Janssen, which is what people call Johnson & Johnson, and that's 50 billion. So
are you sure? You're interrupting because some others are saying it's 40 trillion. And I'm wondering where they come up with that number. I've seen that 40 trillion referenced a few times now, but you're saying 13 billion. I mean, they're both huge numbers, but three orders of magnitude.
Right. So yeah, it is. Well, there's actually equations that you can use, and I put those references on the website as well, that you can actually go calculate based upon the size of the molecules and the size, how many versions you're getting of it.
So it's that's 13 where those, billion.
Yeah, it's 13.1 billion for the mRNA and 50 billion for the double-stranded DNA. Okay. So here's the thing. When you have a person transferring from person to person, virus, even though it's a gain of function man-made virus, they're getting hundreds, thousands, I don't know, let's be generous and say 10,000. Mm-hmm. Okay. So every one of those has to attach to a cell and they put a code sequence. Now, you give vaccines to, so what happened was the people with the comorbidities, they already had heart disease and high blood pressure. They died because they already had inflammation, blood clots, just made it worse. And unfortunately, nobody treated them for the inflammation, the blood clotting. Had they done that, I would argue that these people would still be alive. In fact, our study showed 99.83% succeeds. Maybe we'd have lost 20,000 people in the U.S., which is still a fair number of people. Don't get me wrong. It's just not over 600,000, right? We lost three people in this study, and those three people I still think about every day because they're three people that we lost. So you get that type of phenomenon, and what you see is person to person has problems if you have underlying diseases that don't get treated. Now what you take is you mass vaccinate the population, and you have people who are healthy, and that's what we're seeing, healthy people. Why are they having reactions? Because they're healthy. They're getting inundated with billions of genetic sequences making spike proteins that don't stay at the site of injection. We know a study that we published that's on the website that Moderna published using lipid nanoparticle vaccines for influenza, and they published it in 2017. And the animal models showed that the lipid nanoparticles didn't stay at the site. They were in the brain, the bone marrow, the liver, the spleen, the every part of the body. So for people to come up now and say, gosh, golly gee whiz, we just didn't expect that, is a little disingenuous. You have to ask yourself the question, why does the cardiologist know about the 2017 paper, but the people responsible for the technology claim that they don't? And so what you see are normal, healthy people responding to a massive production of spike proteins, and those people should, healthy people should make a massive immune response. And what does that immune response do? Produces inflammation. And then the spike proteins go across the blood-brain barrier and causes prion diseases, just like what's been shown in the humanized mice and the rhesus macaque models. Now, I'm willing to bet that the people who made this gain of function virus already knew that, because retrospectively, one of the things that I discovered, one of the things that had the government coming after me early on and Big Pharma coming after me in the 1990s, was the fact that the research that I was doing in dietary and inflammatory disease has the same Neuro5AC RAFT receptor that the GLAD20 of HIV that Xuzheng Li put in 2004 attaches to. So the people that were doing this were paralleling my research, except stupid me, I was just focusing, I thought, on something really good, inflammation and heart disease and that type of thing. But it turns out that that information is critical for getting this virus to be able to attach and to infect people like it's doing. So it's interesting how you can be minding your own business and doing really good research and trying to answer some questions, and it might just expose the people that are doing nefarious things. But it's and you know, the question the book asks is COVID-19 a bioweapon? And you know, the data is extremely painful. The question is, what are we going to do about it? And I think the answer is very clear. Unless you think these people did not develop this and stop, this is not the first go round. Mm-hmm. In fact, Li Mengyan very clearly that her work over in China, that she knew very clearly that SARS-CoV-1 was the first bioweapon. And one thing that's pointed out in the book is that the Chinese published a paper where they did a gain of function virus that they combined four viruses in 2006. Those viruses were HIV, hepatitis, SARS-CoV-1, and SARS-CoV-2. And they labeled it that way. So in 2006, they had this, they were working on it.
Is that Barrick in North Carolina?
That was another group of researchers out of China. So the Chinese were putting this together. This was, so when I say that, you know, more than Barrick, I mean, there's evidence to show that a number of countries were involved. It's just that the U.S. and China managed to excel at this. And, you know, I got a job offer the other day to try to recruit me to be the physicist imaging specialist for an NIAID project on viruses at Fort Detrick. Yeah. I when I got those email requests, I thought, you have got to be kidding. Do you know who I am? I mean, this is a nice example of people looking out there for the right people with the right type of training to do things, but not asking that fundamental question of what are the ethics of these people?
Yeah. Well, hopefully that'll be their one of the major factors contributing to their ultimate downfall. I want to go back to a point you mentioned earlier with respect to the individuals having to decide about taking this COVID injection. I hesitate to call it a vaccine because it really isn't by any definition, strict definition. So, and you assume that it was, if the average individual knew that there was no statistical difference, it was essentially a placebo, why would they take it? Well, there's external factors that can contribute to that. That, I mean, certainly many people have been in communities where they could have been part of a lottery when $1 to $5 million is mm-hmm. won. And then the others, I mean, I think Biden administration is now considering, and maybe it's implemented by the time this interview, $8 if you get the vaccine. But even more importantly, is mandatory for large segments of the population. And even though, and I'd like your comments on this, because in my mind, that is an absolute distortion of law, because there's no way this could be mandatory. It's an absolute violation of free First Amendment principles for the freedom of choice. So because like every government employee is now mandated to get it. And I think they're the biggest employer in the country. And large corporations, Facebook, CNN just did a nice little attack on fire. Four people who came to work who weren't vaccinated. There are many large companies that are getting away with it and under the justification that it's legal to do. So there's so many of these people don't have that freedom of choice. They literally don't. I mean, if they want to participate in society as they normally did.
Right. Well, to begin with, I would argue there's legal violations that are going on here.
Please expand. There's not many more people qualified than you to address this.
Well, you know, the biggest problem are all the private industries, because the case doesn't apply to private corporations, right? The Constitution of the United States applies to a contract or a compact actually between the states and the federal government. But it's important in the federal government, in this compact that we call the U.S. Constitution, is actually subservient to the states. The states are not subservient to the federal government. And so the state power and the authority to determine what happens, and anything that's public cannot coerce people to do that. Now, how do we know that? Well, because Article 3 of the U.S. Constitution states that interpretation of what's constant or not is the right of the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court has already ruled that there are personal privileges and liberties of people, sex, health care, and family. And all you need to do to prove that, as far as the Supreme Court is concerned, is you need history, custom, and tradition, which we have in this country. We have a history of patients being treated by their doctors and not coercing people to be vaccinated with experimental research. We have a history of doctors using off-label drug use, which raises the question about how the federal government is violating the ability of physicians to practice medicine. We have a government custom of the government not interfering with this doctor-patient relationship. We have several Supreme Court cases in which the Supreme Court has ruled that people have the right to health care as they want it. Rochin versus California had to do with an individual who was forced to undergo emetic medications to force him to vomit, to bring up things in his stomach, that the Supreme Court said, you do not have a right to force this medication on people. Griswold versus showed that the U.S. government cannot take away the personal rights of healthcare and individuals unless there's some type of compelling and substantial reason, and then it has to be put into law. The executive branch, Cruzan versus Director of Missouri Department of Health in 1990, specifically stated that patients have a right to refuse any treatment. You cannot force. Well, this is forced treatment. This is coerced treatment. And Doe v. Rumsfeld proved in 2004 that investigational drugs could not be full unless there is a presidential waiver or informed consent. Well, here's the kicker on presidential waiver, which is what they're going to go to.
Mm-hmm. Is that the justification they're using to?
So here's the thing. Anybody who takes an oath of office, President of the United States, senators, representatives mm-hmm. to Congress, governors, police officers, judges, lawyers, administrative officials, anybody who takes that oath cannot violate the U.S. Constitution. If they do, they've committed by definition. In the U.S. Constitution, it states that treaty law and the Constitution and statutes are the supreme law of the land. The International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights specifically states that you cannot force people to take a drug, that they have to have informed consent, and that animal research has to have been done beforehand to prove it safe. So if a president, including this one, issues an order that this is a mandate and requirement, then he is violating the U.S. Constitution by violating treaty and therefore has committed treason.
Is it an impeachable offense?
It's not only an impeachable offense, it is punishable by death because that's treason. You can't force U.S. citizens to undergo forced experimentation. And you can't get around that by doing something cute like having the FDA say, well, we've now approved it, okay? Because the Supreme Court has already ruled that you cannot force people to take a treatment. And the only party that can change that is the Supreme Court. And that would require a court case taken to the Supreme Court where they said, well, you know, we were wrong before. Has that ever happened? Mm-hmm. It's happened once in the history of the Supreme Court. Only once. Only once. Supreme Court is not going to turn around at this point in time and tell American citizens that you must be vaccinated. Right now, the vaccines are showing for themselves. The problem is there's this increase in Delta variant, right? Well,
but what about Biden court, an issue that he failed or refused to comment on prior to his election? But appears to be, at least as far as I've read, that's his intention at this point. If they're going to put a number of other justices on there to essentially totally unbalance the design of the whole system that our forefathers had.
Well, here's the obligation of the people that rest. You have an obligation to stand up and do what's right. If the elected individuals, the government does not tell the citizens what to do. The citizens, the government, what to do. The elected officials are elected and put there by the people. The government doesn't put the people here. The people have a right to what it can and cannot do. And that's one of the reasons why you want to silence the scientists and the doctors. Mm-hmm. If you can coerce them so they will not talk to the people, separate the people. If you will quarantine the people, we've never quarantined the healthy before in the history of mankind. You don't quarantine the healthy. You quarantine the sick, which my parents did that, right? You're sick. You're staying home from school. You're not spreading this to others, right? That's mm-hmm. that's what common sense, intelligent people do. If you're in society and cough and sneeze on people, you're not going to get better as a result, and you're only going to make other people sick. But you don't quarantine the healthy. You know, there's also data that shows that, you know, natural immunity provides the memory cells to this virus just like it does anything else, and it provides it independent upon how severe the infection was. All these vaccines do, and they're drug vaccine biologics, they're designed to elicit an immune response, okay? And they're playing this game. All they do, and people don't understand this either, they do not prevent you from getting infected and you from spreading the infection. What they do is, because you've been exposed to it, in this case, the spike protein, you will form an immune response to it. And then when you become for real, it will shorten the amount of time it takes you to respond to it. So your symptoms will be less. Well, guess what? Advil, Motrin, Aleve, ibuprofen, all does the same thing, and it didn't cost us billions and trillions of dollars to do, and it didn't violate your rights. You get to go decide if you want to take those medications or not. So
even though the risk, I mean, there's many professionals who are not recommending anti-inflammatories in COVID.
Well,
With the exception of severe disease and you drugs like budesonide and methylprednisolone.
Yeah,
let's get back to your original argument, because it's really good. You laid a strong argument, legal case for not vaccinations, even though it appears that large segments of the population are undergoing that right now.
Right.
So even though you've laid out that case, how do we prevent this? I mean, is it a revolution coming up, or is it legal suits that need to be followed? What's the process?
Yeah, so more than one thing, obviously. On the website, on FlemingMethod.com, you can go. There's exemptions. I've already put together a format, medical, legal, religious, and constitutional rights that people have. You're welcome to go there, download the PDF, add your medical information in there, your name, the people involved, and send it into the people. That's the first step, okay? Taking action.
Where do they send the form to?
Well, they send it to whoever is mandating that they take the vaccine, right?
Giving them notice. Even federal employees.
Absolutely. Yeah. And this is where I got to the place that the president would have to actually issue a waiver on what the Supreme Court has already done under Doe v. Rumsfeld. And doing so then violates the Constitution and an impeachable offense because he's violated his oath. So that's one thing. The second thing is for people
Before a second thing, is that Doe v. Rumsfeld, Donald Rumsfeld?
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'd have to go back and look at it. I'm so used to thinking of that term. Yeah. It had to do with the administration of the investigational drugs to military personnel.
Yeah, probably was.
So. The other thing is to take legal action. So I'm working with a number of attorneys to file suits in this country. I will also tell you that I am one of the experts in the international court and Italian courts right now for suits being filed for crimes. So the bottom line answer to this is going to be everybody deciding that they need to take action and they need to be held accountable. This may mean you lose your job. The founding fathers knew this. If you read through the Declaration of Independence, they dedicated their lives, their prosperity, their mm-hmm. sacred honor to each other, and every one of them was gone after by the system, by the king, but they stayed with it because they did what was right. And you have to look at this at this point in time and say, what type of world are you leaving your children and your this is never about you. This is never about me. This is about the children and the grandchildren. Mm-hmm. And they, if whatever we leave them, they're going to essentially be stuck with. If we abandon them, and the founding fathers did not abandon us, then we are responsible for allowing this to happen.
Mm-hmm.
It's on us. So there's no easy way. I mean, you know, putting this book out there, you know, bioweapon. I'm not going to get pats on the back. The U.S. federal government is not going to say, Richard, that was a good thing for you to do. Thank you for doing that. Thank you for being an honest, upstanding scientist, physician, attorney. You know, they're not going to do that. I don't expect them to do that because you know what? These people committed crimes.
Mm-hmm.
And criminals, real, honest to God, criminals don't know what they've done. You know, if you want to know if somebody's a criminal or not, check to see whether they tell you about what's happened. And if they do, they're probably not a criminal, right? Criminals hide stuff. These people have been hiding stuff for decades, and they don't want you to know about it, and they don't want you to talk about it. You're going to have to accept responsibility that if you're a student, you may not go to that college you wanted to go to because they've decided they want to force things on you. I did a presentation in Fort Worth a little bit more than a week ago here now, and this mother, so I was done and I was leaving and I had security. And I can see this woman in the back of my eye running down the street after me. And I thought, I don't think she's here to attack me. And I could see, you know, she was, so I stopped. She said, I have to tell you, my son just gave up a $200,000 sports scholarship to attend the 4-year college that he'd always wanted to go to. And they were going to college, which wasn't going to be nearly the glamour. Mm-hmm. And he was given up $200,000, right? But they made that decision. They made the decision. This comes with hard questions that really kind of shakes the core of us. But it also answers that question to that sign that I'm sure you've seen copies of as well as I have. If you ever wonder what you would have done in 1930s Germany, today you know.
That's right.
Yeah.
So I want to go a little deeper in the legal proceedings that you're participating in or planning on overseas in Italy and in the U.S. and give us an update on what they can be. And I think you mentioned, I think that was authored by Francis Boyle, who I've interviewed a few times early last year. He was my first insights. I mean, we kind of blew the whistle on GAIN of 2020. Which was early on, or definitely early on, but he authored that and is specifically the penalty is not death. Interestingly, if you violate that treaty, it's imprisonment because he's not a fan of the death penalty. But is that the primary treaty that you're going to be looking at, or is it the Nuremberg, Helsinki? And what is the plan, and where are we at, and what are your projections as to the timing on it?
To answer the latter part, the time plan is for anybody who's been an attorney, or I guess the answer is it's always up to the judges how long they want to take.
Yeah, sure.
You know, they have that nice little privilege. So it's actually all of the above. It has to do with the Biological Weapons Convention Treaty. It has to do with the Nuremberg Code. It has to do with the Declaration of Helsinki. It has to do with the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights, as well as any other statutes that come up. But what you do is you file cases in the International Criminal Court. The United States seems to think that just because it didn't ratify the ICC, that U.S. citizens, and that would be incorrect. Although it's nice fantasy if you're living in that world and you think that's what's going to protect you. The court then that have already been filed with the ICC, the court gets to decide then what it wants to do, if it wants to launch an investigation. And at this stage of the process, these two is perpetrators. Not exactly a very nice term when you think about it. And the goal would be to get the ICC to do their responsibility and recognize their place in history.
What does the ICC stand for?
International Criminal Court. It's okay. In The Hague.
And yeah. Do you believe that they are partial and objective, or are they much of the other judicial systems?
I believe that there have still, look, there's either, if they're totally corrupt, then there's not much we can do about that from that point of view, okay? But that doesn't mean you've never seen me, if you knew me as an individual, you realize I don't roll over on anything. This is where I proudly recognize my Viking bloodline, and Vikings just don't roll over for you. I don't think any Viking ever rowed over for anybody, and I'm certainly not going to be the first one. But so it doesn't really matter how long this takes or to whom this has to go. But I'm a firm believer that there are enough good, honest people on this planet that if communicate and work together, the tide on this can and will be turned. There's a group of Italian physicians that are meeting next week that I did a recording earlier for today, sent to them so that they have enough time to put subtitles in Italian on the bottom of it. And it's a group of Italian physicians who feel like they're going up against this mass part of the Italian government and being coerced in the same way that we feel in this country. And I'll tell you that, you know, this is the same story all over the world. All the people that I talk to in the different countries that I've been working with, feeling they're coerced, their citizens are being bribed, which, as a side note, anytime the government has to bribe the people to do it, you have to say, if it was really a good idea, would you have to bribe me? I would be lining up for it. You know, I'm the ultimate, I think, research scientist. After 53 years, I really feel very strongly being a scientist physician, you know, and I am incredibly offended when Anthony Fauci says he is science, because he's not. I mean, I've met some of the very best people in science. I've been privileged to be trained by some of the very best people in the history of science, and hopefully we'll do them honor in the end. But the perspective that a scientist has to manipulate and bribe real science, you know, if these drug vaccines actually worked, and there was scientific evidence, I'd be on here telling you to take it. What you're hearing me tell you is don't take it. These things are biological weapons. They're nothing more than the genetic code of a biological weapon that was made, that was paid for, and put together by nefarious people.
Just curious, were you prior to COVID, were you a believer in vaccines, and were you up to date on your immunization?
Not anti-vax.
That's what I thought. And you've gotten them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Many of them. I mean, I don't get influenza vaccines because, you know,
doesn't make sense.
Look, after year, I get exposed to people. I do what I did as a kid. I develop my immune response to it, T cells and antibodies and memory cells, and I'm good to go. Okay. You know, I mean, my patients in hospitals have shared some of the worst diseases with me and pneumonias that, you know, I could ever not want to have gotten, but I survived it and moved forward because, okay, I'm a functional immune system. I understand other people, you know, have immune problems and need to be cautious in other ways and should be so. But I'm not, you know, these vaccines are not doing anything for those. And not anti-vaccine. I'm anti-stupid.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Good way to be. Well, it's interesting because Robert Malone, obviously the co-inventor of the mRNA platform, Peter McCullough, Malone was a vaccinologist, and you know he reached a different conclusion on this whole process of what they're doing. So you're in his camp. A great job by putting this all together. So your wealth of information, and I'm just so excited that you're leading the charge to fight this thing and legal. Two attorneys are joining you in this process.
So because of the fact that I'm the expert witness for the ICC, I cannot be the attorney filing the case. You can't be the attorney and the expert witness. Okay. It just turns out I'm one of the expert witnesses. So there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 attorneys in, and possibly a 7th attorney, 6 countries coalescing for a joint case that they'll be able to tell more about. The Italians have their own case. I know that I've been working with several to try to get cases going on in this country. I've been very successful in getting a lot of exemptions for people using the form that I put on FlemingMethod.com, but there's only one of me and all of you, so I put this exemption on there with bold font that says insert your material here.
Yeah, right. Well, that's a great service because a lot of people will use it, but ultimately, you know, the consequences that they may have to decide not to attend that Scholastic institution, which could be a blessing in disguise. Even that one student who had did not accept his $200,000 scholarship. I mean, it may have been an institution that could have ruined him for life. You know, you don't know, especially what they're teaching in colleges nowadays. It's not the same when we went to school. It really wasn't. Dramatically changed.
If you look at the funding of this vaccine and this virus and the people blocking the drugs, and you ask the question, who's giving a lot of money to these universities? It's the same people.
Yeah.
Why would you want to go to a university that is being funded by people that are trying to manipulate you? And if they're manipulating you, then your family too. So, you know, I realize that the kids going to university are in their 20s, but they're adults and they care about their parents. They care about their siblings. They care about their grandparents and other people that are close to them and family and friends. And I don't think they want to see their friends manipulated any more than anyone else. One of the things I do want to make a comment on, though, is for the people that have not been vaccinated. When you're looking at the people that have been vaccinated, step back for just a moment and recognize that many of those people got vaccinated because they were told that this was the only way that they loved. And what we need to do is have the intelligence and the compassion necessary to look at those individuals and say, I got it. No judgment. If there's a shedding problem or something like that that you're dealing with, there are treatments that are available that you can look at. I've put those on the website too. But you come together, support those people, be doing what they thought was right. And for many of them, they are so scared and they have been made so scared. Mm-hmm. By the way, what type of country, what type of world, but what spends so much effort frightening the blazes out of its citizens? Well, says something.
Well, fear is one of the most absolutely powerful and motivating triggers. And it's absolutely essential if they're going to implement this strategy. It's the most critical part of the propaganda campaign is fear.
Yeah,
there's no question about it.
May the odds be ever in your favor.
Yeah. No surprise. And I hold no judgment against those individuals either, because this is, as I said, it's likely, it is the most effective propaganda campaign in the history of humanity. And it's hard to blame someone when they're under that type of assault. I mean, an individual isn't enlightened enough to seek informed opinions elsewhere, and they're just listening to the media, people they trust, and the politicians and the public health officials. They are going to get a consistent message that convinces them that they need to get this. And you know, how could you argue with that? I mean, that's a rational choice.
Yeah. So, the next time, of course, you or your friends to get vaccinated, I would like your listeners to go to the website and tell them to pull out the EUA documents and have the people read documents and prove that there's a benefit to these vaccines. And then I want them to go to the book, Is COVID-19 a Bioweapon? And I want them to read the truth about where this came from.
Yeah. The book, Is COVID-19 a Bioweapon? But I think even more importantly, because you know, I've written a large number of books now. And before I wrote my first one, I was always reluctant to do it because I had the website and said, I don't want to write a book because it's out of date so soon. You know, I mean, but by the time you've written and published it, I mean, things have changed so pretty dramatically in many cases. It's great to have that as a resource and documentation of the fraud that's been going on. But your website is phenomenal, especially for providing this form for people to at least have a hope of getting an exemption from these mandatory vaccines that are being forced upon them. So thank you for
thank
doing
you.
That.
Yeah. Thank you.
And it's FlemingMethod.com.
Right. FlemingMethod, no space in between.com. So yeah, just one perfect. M and Fleming, no stuttering.
Yeah. Yeah. There you go. It's good. It's very good. All right. Any last words?
I'm sorry. You cut out for a moment.
I'm sorry. Any last words or do you like to share or comments?
No, I think
reinforce something.
I think there's a lot of people that are very concerned that things have gone south, so to speak, and I'm actually encouraged. One of the things that I've noticed about being here in Dallas and in Texas is that common sense has not died. And it may be that it's our most useful treatment for SARS-CoV-2 and COVID-19 and the vaccines and everything going on since that people want. I know that this is sometimes people think of it as a complex topic because people weren't aware of viruses really that much before all of this. What I've repeatedly gotten from people is don't dumb it down. It's not a matter of turning people into PhD, MDs or whatever. It's a matter of just being truthful and honest with them and people good capacity when they get away from all the nonsense happening to look at the truth and realize it's the truth and to listen to nonsense being thrown at them and realize garbage and manipulation. So common sense is a real useful tool for everybody to have that and compassion, real compassion, not this fake pretend compassion that people talk to.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more, but it's unfortunately it's a bit of a challenge to exercise common sense when you've been inundated with propaganda and you've been it's actively engaged in responding to the fear, this constant pressure, and then compounded with in many communities being forced into isolation, which is another strategy for propaganda. They isolate people. And so it's not for the fear of contagion that this was done intentionally to amplify the propaganda impact.
Keep people from talking to each other.
Yeah.
Stop them exchanging ideas. We used to frequently sit down and have conversations with families and friends where you'd argue back and forth and you discuss that be the only person that would walk away from a conversation and go, well, I hadn't really thought about that. Let me think about that because that's kind of a different point of view. But that exchange stopped. Yeah. When they quarantined people and they isolated us and then they put us in our homes and they controlled what you could see on the internet and on television, that stopped. Well, we've come far enough back out of it that exchange has started again. And people have had to really fight to get that information out. But it's that sharing of information and knowledge that is so critical to turning this around and actually bringing all of this nonsense under control. But the manipulation of people that has been going on and the lies and the deceit and the abuse of power, and they used our money to do it, our lives to do it. They used our livelihoods to do it.
Yeah. Well, it's probably the most almost everyone. One of us will face. It was forced upon us and requires a response one way or the other. And we're deeply appreciative of the work that you're committing to this to help those of us who aren't as skilled as you in these areas to compile the resources to address this in some way. So thank you so much for what you've done.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks so much for watching. Remember, hit the like and subscribe button so you can get those. They can help you and your family take control of your health.